Hey there, Quajo here, and if you haven't heard my voice, I'm the new host of the Art of Online Business. Quick update on my new offer. I did not expect the initial launch spots to sell out so fast. I'm talking about Facebook Ad Setup to Success, which is one-on-one Facebook ads coaching for the driven course creator from me, three Zoom calls within a month, and unlimited support in between so that you can run your lead generation campaigns, your launch campaigns, your SLO, self-liquidating offer funnels, exactly like I would, getting all my tips and tricks and strategies, plus just unlimited support inside of Slack or Voxer, or one lady's even doing it from inside of Messenger, with screen recordings, Loom recordings, this sort of thing, questions. This is what I'm doing, but all those limited spots at the initial launch price, they are gone. And I just wanted to explain that out of integrity to the people who took those first spots. The price has gone up, and there's one spot, maybe two, if I do some scheduling jujitsu for May. Otherwise, we're booking into June. You can click on the link in the description below to find out more, or you can go to theartofonlinebusiness.com/call if you need that kind of one-on-one Facebook help. All right, back to the episode.
Welcome to the Art of Paid Traffic. This is the show where I bring you the best tips, tactics, and strategies for using paid traffic to grow your business on autopilot. You'll also hear what's working and not working right now from the top minds in online marketing so that you can get more leads and sales every day without having to empty your wallet in the process. If you're looking to get started with Facebook ads, you're a total beginner and you'd like to learn how you can create profitable Facebook ads for less than $10 a day, don't miss my free streaming online workshop that I put together for you, which you can sign up for over at rickmulready.com/newbies. That's N-E-W-B-I-E-S, rickmulready.com/newbies. All right, here's today's episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Art of Paid Traffic podcast. How's it going? I am Rick Mulready. Thanks so much for hanging out with me today. Really appreciate you tuning into the podcast here. Great conversation with a really smart guy today. Ollie Gardner is the co-founder of Unbounce, which if you're not familiar with Unbounce, they are a site for marketers where they offer helpful tools and resources to help you create high converting landing pages for your campaign. Their website is awesome. They have amazing resources over there at the blog section, and they also have a resources section which you can download guides and stuff like that. I've gone down many a wormhole over on unbounce.com. So if you've not been there before, great content to check out when you're looking for help with landing pages and conversion optimization, paid traffic, and so forth. Now, Ollie is an expert in all these things I've just mentioned. He's an expert in landing pages, conversion and optimization, design, and also things like copywriting, UI, and branding. And we go into all these things here today. So today you're going to learn the elements every highly converting landing page should have. Ollie breaks down the hierarchy structure every marketer should go through when creating a landing page. This was a really interesting part of the conversation, and I'm going to give you a hint here. This is a really important process that most of us are not currently going through, myself included. We talk about Ollie's recommendation for how to properly optimize a landing page. He answers if he could just give three copywriting tips for a great landing page, what would those three tips be? And we also talk about landing page design, what kind of designs that Ollie's liking and not liking these days. Now, we cover a lot in this one, so I've created a paid traffic bonus for you. This bonus is landing page best practices, which breaks down for you everything that Ollie teaches in today's episode. You're going to want to reference this thing every time you make a landing page for your products, services, and campaigns. I know that I've had it very close by ever since my interview with Ollie, so I've been referencing it a lot. Now, you can download today's paid traffic bonus resource over on my show notes page for today's episode. It's free. You just enter your email there and you can just download it. The show notes page is at rickmulready.com/42. That's the number 42, rickmulready.com/42. All right, let's go hang out with Ollie. Hey, Ollie, welcome to the Art of Paid Traffic. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Rick. Good to be here.
So we're going to be talking some conversion optimization today, something that we've talked a little bit about here on the show before, but I know that you're really an expert in this, and you've done some really cool things there with Unbounce. So I want to start off with, you know, talking about some elements that you think that every highly converting landing page should have. Are there specific elements that we should be looking out for when we're creating our landing pages?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of elements on a page usually, but there are some kind of essential elements, a core set, you know, in the anatomy that you need to construct anything. You know, landing pages are no different there. But these are just structural only, so they're a good place to start. So you have your headline, your subhead. They communicate your value proposition. Now, actually, an interesting part there is people talk about USP, unique value proposition, or whatever. But there's a difference when you talk about landing pages. Landing pages are for marketing campaigns. Your website is for organic traffic. Landing pages for campaigns. So it's really a unique campaign proposition at that point. So it has to speak just about that campaign, not your overall kind of mission. Then you'll have some benefit statements, you know, features and benefits. A hero shot, which is the primary image or video, ideally showing your product or service actually being used, not just a static photo, you know, something a bit more demonstrative. Then
Is that like somebody using, like one of your customers using the product or service that you're doing, or is that you doing it? Is there kind of a best practice there?
Yeah, well, think of, let's say you have a product that's a small stepladder that helps shorter people reach into high cupboards in the kitchen. If you just had a photo of this thing on a white background, I mean, yeah, that's what
it is.
But the context of use is more important than that. So if you showed someone standing on it and doing that, and then showed step two, like someone folding it up and putting it under the sink, now I see the benefit of it visually,
okay,
rather than just being, you know, a product shot.
And is there generally one way to go better than another, whether we're going to be using images or a video, or does it really depend on where the traffic is coming from when they're landing on that page?
In some circumstances, yeah. I mean, one thing about video is that you should be designing an experience that communicates what your offer is, making the assumption people won't watch the video. Because in many circumstances, I've seen that maybe only 10% of people will actually watch the video, depending on the landing page. If all you have is a video, higher likelihood people are going to do that. But also, interestingly, and this comes down to like an autoplay question as well, which is generally a bad practice, but when it's an exception, let's say you have an email, you're doing email marketing, and you have a thumbnail, a video thumbnail in there because you want people to click on it. If people click on a thumbnail that looks like a video, they expect a video.
Yeah.
So having autoplay then is perfectly okay because they've asked for it.
Interesting. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then you've got your call to action, which might be a form or just a button to click through. So they're the main elements. But like I said, that's just the structure, and there are, you know, those things don't really change because they're best practices. And best practice warning: people crap on best practices all the time, but they're essential to get you started. You know, because not everybody's an expert, so they're a good place to start. But really, the things that do change are people, processes, and experience. They're the things that do change. So it's kind of important to think about the whole structure of your marketing campaign. You know, when you set up a campaign, what's the purpose? What are the metrics you're going to use to measure success? What are the channels you're going to be running through? What's the architecture of this whole campaign? What's your optimization plan? An interaction model, your information hierarchy, copy, the design, setup, QA, launch, postmortem. It sounds like a lot, but that's a great framework to have established. And over time, you'll have built up landing page templates for these campaigns, and you start reusing them and optimizing, and it gets much easier. But it's starting off from a strong perspective is a really way to go.
Sure. Now, I liked where you were going with that. Can we actually kind of break that down? I mean, there was a lot. It seemed like a lot of steps there, but I think that talking about that framework there, sort of that template that you just mentioned, I think is really important. Can we start to break that down and see where, you know, the three P's that you just mentioned and where each of those fit into this overall process here?
Yeah. Do you want me to just run through them and kind of expand on it a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. That sounds great.
Yeah, so your purpose, you should never, there are two acronyms I like. Never start a marketing campaign without a dedicated landing page. But conversely, never build a landing page without a campaign goal. So you need your goal first before you do anything. And you need to know what you're actually going to measure. So what are the metrics? What's important to you? Is it a lead? Is it a trial of software? Is it taking someone from a lead to become a customer? Have your metrics very clear so that you can see, you know, someone might go, oh, this campaign's doing so well. It's getting so much traffic. But are they doing what you want them to do? Well, right. No. So it's not successful. What channels? So if you're doing email, paid search, social, they're all different because they have a different level of context prior to the click. Like an email has a conversation, a tweet has very little, and an ad just has search intent. So each experience based on the channel can often be different. Architecture. So sometimes it's good just a whiteboard, like just look at everything, put all your channels in there. Maybe different landing pages for each channel. That's kind of advanced, but it's a really good way of working. And just write everything on a big whiteboard so you can see how this thing comes together. Because often you'll spot holes or opportunities as well. An optimization plan. What do you hope to learn from running this campaign? You know, have you done some research? Do you have an observed pain point, maybe from a previous campaign, that you can develop a hypothesis for testing during this campaign so you can learn something? Then there's an interaction model. This is really, I mean, your campaign should be very simple. One click on the email, just a one purpose there, one purpose on your landing page. Just kind of map that out. Make sure you're not having too many things to do. Then you get to your copy, and that's information hierarchy. I like to write a linear, linear experience. Just forget the design at this point. And then you design an experience based on that copy. Then you go through the technical setup, building your landing pages, building a page variant if you're going to run a test, do some QA, make sure links aren't broken and all this kind of stuff, then launch it. And then finally, a post-mortem, like always look at your campaign after the fact and what did you do right, what did you do wrong, so you can feed that. What did you learn from the tests? You can feed that all back into the cycle.
Now, how many variations, I have a couple of questions that came out of that. How many variations do you generally suggest for, let's just say I'm designing, I have one goal and I've created, mm-hmm. I've gone through that entire process that you just mentioned there. How many variations of a landing page am I going to be creating, or am I just creating one at a time? And then as it's going, I start to, you know, A/B split test different variations of the page.
Yeah, it depends on your hypothesis. You should never run a test without, like I said, doing some research and having this observed pain. Let's say you have an event, a webinar, or a course, which takes time to go through. If you do research and say, like, you know, what's preventing you from doing this course, you might get things, I've done this, you might get things such as, it's too long, or I can't commit the time.
Yep.
Now, you know, there's a time-based problem, so you can address that, making things shorter, or talk about the fact, oh, it's easy, each one only takes 15 minutes, that kind of thing. So then it really depends on what your hypothesis is as to how many variants. I'm running a test right now, which I'm trying to see the impact of when you have an email address field. So I got three variants. I have the main, the champion one, which is, it just says email address as the label on the form field. The next one is your best email address. And the third one is business email address. Hmm. Now, I don't expect a conversion rate change on these. I expect them to all be the same pretty much. I might be surprised, but I think they'll be the same. What I'm looking for is what kinds of quality of email am I getting? I'm going to look through them and go, how many are Gmail versus an actual company name to see whether that language can, like, you know. So my hypothesis is that we can do better if we have business email addresses. So I'm testing different labels to try and pull that out of people.
So are you going back later and looking at the deliverability of the email campaign that you're sending out?
No, this is really just, I'll be looking at all the leads and just, I'll manually go through and just kind of get a gut check on which version gets the best types of email address.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Because you figure that the business email is the one that you want rather than, say, a Gmail address.
Exactly. Yeah. People are, it gives you a bit more insight into which companies are signing up, but it's generally going to be a bit more serious.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, you mentioned something too there, talking about linear copywriting. So let's talk about copywriting for a little bit. Can you kind of describe what you mean by that linear copywriting?
Yeah. So an important thing to remember is that copy informs design, not the other way around. You know, templates are great for getting you started, but you shouldn't write three bullet points because your template has three bullet points. You know, you shouldn't have four features because the template has four feature placeholders. So you should write, you know, have your campaign goal and then write all of your copy. And then design an experience that communicates that. And I've done tests where having a two-column layout, people are jumping around between different types of information. And every time you change information, you're not really aware of it, but the cognitive load, you're learning something every time you move to a different format of information. But if you do a linear experience where it's just like, say, a single column, and you're just reading one thing after another as you go down, it's just a more direct path to the end. And I find it's a lot simpler. It's also how you should write, you know, just like boom, 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 one thing after another. And that can inform how you develop your design.
Now, something I just thought about as you were talking about that there is that a lot of people get hung up on the writing part and they think they're not good copywriters.
Right.
What would you say to that person? And number two, do you think it's a good idea for them to hire a copywriter as opposed to just kind of suffering through creating, you know, trying to create copy for their landing page?
Truth is, most people suck at copywriting, especially persuasive copy.
Myself included.
It's difficult, but I would advise people to try. I mean, everybody thinks they can't write. Well, if that's the case, it's not true because you write every day. What I like to do, it's kind of it's taken from the artist's way, is basically when, do this for a month. Every day when you get up, write 300 words about anything mm-hmm. before you do anything else. Okay. It just gets you into a rhythm and you can start figuring out, and you never know where to go. And sometimes it'll turn into something related to your business, but often you just ramble, but you'll just get better at it. So practice is really important. But you know, if your conversion rate's not good, then maybe you do need to hire someone. But something that's really good to do is do a clarity test. So I use Usability Hub, where you can upload a screenshot and you do a 5-second test. So you ask a question like, what is this page about? Or how would you describe this page to someone else? And then you can look at like 20 answers and you can look at this qualitative data and see if people can actually figure out what your page is about. If they can't, you have a clarity problem. So that's kind of teaching you which elements, maybe your headline isn't clear. So that's a good way of kind of figuring out if you're
right. It's a bit of help. It's Usability Hub, is that right?
Yeah.
You just upload a screenshot and you can ask, do you ask like a specific question that you want to get feedback on and then just
yes.
random people who are in there get to look at it and give you feedback?
Yeah, exactly. It's the 5-second test. So like basically you ask a question, then the screenshot gets flashed up for 5 seconds, then it comes down. You give instructions first, then they see that, and then you ask the question. You can ask more questions. Mm-hmm. You can ask like 3 in a row, but I find that's a little bit too much from someone who's only seen it for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it gives you like a tag cloud, a word cloud, so you can see like which ones are really jumping out, and it can be surprising.
Really cool. I'll be sure and link that up in the show notes page. And you mentioned also the artist way. I've heard, I'm totally blanking on the author of that book. I'm trying to think of it right now, but I've heard about that book for some reason a lot lately. What, do you know the author?
Yes, I just searched for Julia Cameron.
Okay. I've heard about that book a lot lately, and I've heard it's really good as far as writing goes, and it's definitely one that I want to pick up.
It's massive. It's a big book. It's for people really serious about writing, but that play on the one of the main exercises, it's called Your Pages or something. It's what, you know, writers get up. And it's, you have to do it, if you're doing it properly, you follow that, you have to handwrite this stuff because it really... it makes you slow down, and like I couldn't do that. My handwriting's terrible.
So is mine. Well, are there any other books, like copywriting books, that you would highly recommend that people kind of pick up? And you know, if they, I think it's one of those arts, like you just mentioned, most people are terrible at copywriting, so you can always be improving that art. What are some books that you recommend for it?
It's funny, I got asked this the other day, and I've only ever read 2 books on copywriting.
Oh, really? Only putting on the spot.
Yeah, well, what I would recommend, if you go to unbalanced.com, go to the resources link in the main nav, go to the ebook section and find the copywriting one by Joanna Wiebe. It's excellent, and it's a fairly quick read. That's a really, really good way because it's about landing page copy, so it's great for campaign-based writing.
Awesome. She's an upcoming guest here on the show.
Oh, nice.
I don't know the date quite yet, but she has confirmed, so that's going to be a great conversation. One more question about copywriting. I mean, if there were just 3 copywriting tips that you could give to somebody for a great landing page, what would they be?
Mm-hmm. When you've written your headline, your subhead, reverse the order and see how it reads.
Okay.
That's the information hierarchy thing again. I find it's so common that all of the clarity in your communication lies in the subhead. Your subhead is supposed to add clarity, not be the only thing that's clear.
Right.
But very often people do a clever headline or whatever, which can work, but generally speaking, you know, clarity beats clever. So yeah, I would just flip them and just read it and see how it sounds. All right, it's similar to that. Print out your page and then read it out loud while walking in a circle. Because reading out loud, and maybe have someone listen, you'll hear completely different things when you're saying it out loud. And the walking a circle thing is kind of to add some distraction as if you're an impatient visitor. That's a good exercise.
Okay, I like that.
Another one. This one's really, I got this from a friend of mine, Carlos Del Rio, and I can't stop talking about it. It's so good. Ask your customer to write your headline for you. Because they have gone through the experience. They know why they like your product or your service. They're happy with it. So getting them, because they're, you know, Joanna will probably talk about this, where you can go and take their language from testimonials and all this kind of thing. That's one way. But actually having them sit down and write it, they're going to speak directly to the benefit that speaks most to them. So it's a really cool.
I've never heard that one before. I love that.
Yeah.
That is great.
And finally, for writing your call to action copy, this is a very simple one. As a starting point, well, never use the word submit. You know, yes, people know that clicking on the submit button will submit the form. They know that. That's not the problem. It's just that you're missing out on an opportunity to be persuasive. So make your call to action copy, complete the sentence, I want to blank. I want to start my free trial. I want to download this ebook, my ebook. And another little tip there, using the word my often converts better than your, because there's a bit more of an association with what I'm going to get rather than the
opposite. I've wondered that. And yeah, I mean, obviously it's one of those things you got to test out, but I've often wondered that because I thought about the same thing too. It's like, well, do they think it's my, like I'm writing it. So is it my, or are they thinking it's for them? So that's a great point.
Yeah, actually, I'm just opening up Spotify here because there's something in there that I really dislike along those lines. I can't find it, but it's along those lines, and it really doesn't speak to me in the way that it should. It's the my word really, really helps.
Okay.
Last question for you. Are there any kind of landing page designs? And you mentioned earlier that the copy that you're writing should really come, or the design should come as a result of your copy. But are there any designs that you're seeing these days that you're particularly liking?
You mean aside from the 98% that suck?
Yeah. What about those 2%? What about that 2%?
Really, it's the information hierarchy thing. I can't get enough of it. When I see people doing that right, I automatically like it more. It's a more delightful experience. So that's kind of why I'm really geeking out on the single column layout thing. That's kind of what I'm liking. But the converse, like this 98% that are bad, what scares me are the yearly design trends that come in that we then have to deal with. So there was parallax, then ghost buttons, background videos, and the worst one right now, you know, I'd love to get some, take a data-driven approach and mine our database. We have a project about to start to see some aggregate data, like does a ghost button, how does it compare on average to a button that's more buttony? I'd love that insight. But the worst one right now, people, a lot of designers and theme developers, landing page designers, they're putting in this kind of scroll manipulation jQuery or something where when you scroll, it tries to kind of control it for you. It kind of changes the way it shifts, and it's a disaster. Mm-hmm. You know, like you shouldn't mess with 20 years of established competition. Browsers know how to scroll the page. We just had a competition with ThemeForest where people designed landing pages that work in sign and bounce. And I had to critique them. And out of 100 of them, I disqualified 20 immediately because they had that in there.
Oh, really?
It's just a terrible idea.
Now, you mentioned, this has been great. Now, you mentioned unbounce.com. I gotta give a big shout out to the blog over there. You mentioned the resources section. I got to check that out. I have not checked that out yet. But your blog section is amazing. Like, thanks. I get lost in there, and it's a wormhole for me. Like, before I know it, an hour's gone by because it's such great content. Over there, but where else can people connect with you, Ollie?
Twitter is a great place, Ollie Gardner. I'm on there all the time, so if you reach out, you'll get me immediately, or you can email me, Ollie@unbounce.com. I'm very open, so email me directly.
Cool. I'll be sure to link those links up in the show notes page for today's episode. Ollie, this has been great. Like I mentioned before we got going here, we could talk about this for hours. I may have to have you back on the show again, but thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, my pleasure, and please do.
Great conversation with Ollie today. Hope you got a lot out of that one. We covered a lot in a short amount of time, so I broke down everything for you that Ollie went over today in today's paid traffic bonus, which is landing page best practices. It's a guide for you. You're going to want to reference this thing every time that you make a landing page for your business, you know, for your products, services, and campaigns. You can download this bonus resource for free over on the show notes page for today's episode, which is at rickmulready.com/42. That's the number 42. You also find all the links that we talked about, as well as the transcript of the interview today. Again, it's at rickmulready.com/42. All right, my friends, that's all for today's episode. I've got another great one coming up for you in the next episode. Until then, though, keep testing your paid traffic to find out what works for you and your business, and then do more of what's working. And I'll see you in the next episode.
Do you want to avoid the 7 biggest mistakes that burn through course creators' ad money? I see these over and over and over again, and I put them together in a mini email series. This is not fluff. Each of the 7 mistakes, I also have a recorded video tutorial showing you inside of Facebook Ad Manager how to fix those mistakes. This is good, solid, and it will save you money or help you make more money with your Facebook ads. Click down in the show notes below. You'll see the link, and you can go download it right now for free.